Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Tuesday, June 30th, 2020. Producing from his home studio in the foothills of Connecticut is Taylor Schwenk. I'm Buster Olney, working from my home studio in New York. Well, teams are officially set to open for players reporting on Wednesday, but some veterans have already opted out, with more expected as we move forward. The Nationals' Ryan Zimmerman and Joe Ross, the Diamondbacks' Mike Leake, all opted out. Zimmerman walking away from about $750,000. Mike Leake, who's 32 years old, a member of the Diamondbacks, walked away from about $5 million. And late on Monday night, the Rockies' Ian Desmond opted out in a long Instagram post that I encourage everyone to read. At the end, he cited his four kids and Chelsea, his wife, who was pregnant. But he also had a lot of observations about race in Major League Baseball they're going to be talking about coming up with Tim Kurkjian. The Blue Jays are close to receiving approval to play in Toronto, according to Ontario's premier. It's a really complicated situation because the federal standard is that anybody coming into the country needs to self-quarantine, self-isolate for 14 days. And obviously for a baseball team, for players going into Canada or visiting teams going to Canada, they're going to need special dispensation. For now, the Blue Jays are gathering players in Dunedin, Florida, where, of course, in that state, they've had a lot of hot spots lately. Of the coronavirus. San Francisco Giants prospect Hunter Bishop tested positive for the coronavirus. That's what the Giants told reporters yesterday. And if baseball happens, the Mets are hopeful that Yoenis Cespedes can contribute as a designated hitter. Brody Van Wagenen, the Mets general manager, talked yesterday about the progress that Cespedes has made as he comes back from basically a two-year layoff. Now, before we get to Tim Kurkjian, I want to tell you about Marathon Oil. Now more than ever, we have to look out for each other and count on each other. Marathon wants you to know that you can count on them for the high-quality, top-tier gas. Marathon gasolines are formulated with STP additives. They keep your vehicle running at peak performance by optimizing fuel economy, removing those ugly deposit buildups, and by reducing emissions. And right now, you can get 5 cents off every gallon, every day, with Make It Count rewards from Marathon. Plus, you can earn points for additional savings on fuel, airfare, hotels, and more. This is definitely a deal you can count on. It's quick and easy to join. Just download the free Make It Count app or go to makeitcount.com/radio. That's makeitcount.com/radio and start saving today. This offer is valid only at participating Marathon stations. This is the 100th anniversary of the Negro Leagues, and in honor of the Negro Leagues, Major League Baseball, a lot of folks under the umbrella and outside the umbrella, gave a tip of the cap to the Negro Leagues. This reel starts with Hank Aaron, Derek Jeter, and along the way, you're going to hear the voices of three presidents. Give a listen.
I got my start in the Negro League, and I will be forever grateful. Thank you. Congratulations.
Hello, everyone. Derek Jeter here. In order to be able to truly appreciate where you are, you must have a full understanding of who and what came before you. So I just want to say thank you and tip my cap to the 100-year anniversary of the Negro Leagues.
Hi, I'm Magic Johnson, and I'm tipping my cap to the outstanding players of the Negro National League.
Today, I'm tipping my hat to everybody in the Negro Leagues who left a century-long legacy of talent and spirit and dignity are our company.
So we're very thankful, and I just want to tip my cap to you guys.
I want to tip my cap. Thank you guys.
But it is with great pride that I tip my cap to the courageous players of the Negro Leagues.
A tip of the cap to you for that.
I want to tip the hat of my favorite baseball team, the Texas Rangers, to honor 100 years of the Negro Leagues.
I'm tipping my cap to the Negro Leagues. Happy 100 years.
I'm here to give a tip of the cap to the Negro Leagues on the 100th anniversary.
Happy 100th birthday, Negro Leagues.
I tip my cap on this, the 100th anniversary of the Negro Leagues. I don't just tip it, I doff it to the Negro Leagues and the Negro League Museum.
Hi, this is Stephen Colbert. On the centenary of the Negro League, I just want to tip my hat with great respect.
So, I tip in my cap to the Negro League.
You know, 100 years of the Negro League, the celebration of the Negro League, and got a lot to be proud of.
and I wouldn't be in this position if it wasn't for you.
The Negro Leagues made baseball better and America better.
I tip my hat to you.
Let's go play some ball.
And I'd like to congratulate the Negro Leagues on their 100th year anniversary.
Thank you, and I tip my hat.
I'd just like to tip my hat to the Negro Leagues' 100th year anniversary.
We all stand on your shoulders.
So here's my tip to the 100th anniversary of the Negro League.
I think a simple tip of the hat says it all.
I want to tip my hat to the league.
So I tip my cap and I say thank you.
I want to tip my cap to the 100th anniversary of the Negro Leagues.
A thank you and the tip of the cap.
I salute you.
Join me in tipping my cap to the 100th anniversary of Negro League Baseball.
I want to tip my hat and my cap on the 100th anniversary of the beginning of the Negro Leagues.
And I will always love and respect everyone that played in the Negro Leagues.
They gave me the opportunity to play for the good game. Thank you.
I'm tipping my cap to the Negro League. Happy 100 years for you guys.
Here's to another 100 years.
And tip my cap to the 100th anniversary of the Negro Leagues.
Negro Leagues, 100th year anniversary. I'm tipping my cap.
I'm tipping my cap to the Negro Leagues. Happy 100th year anniversary.
I just want to say thank you for the opportunity, and so I tip my hat.
All of us at Major League Baseball tip our caps to you. We vow to ensure that your stories come to life for the next generation.
Team heads rejoice.
Nerd alert!
It's Timmy time.
Is this a great game or what?
With Tim Kirkchin on Baseball Tonight.
Tim Kirkchin covers baseball for ESPN. And Tim, first off, how you doing?
I'm still healthy, Buster, which I think is the most important thing for all of us. So let's hope everyone out there is doing okay also.
Yep, 100%. Yesterday, you know, on a difficult day because we were getting word about players who are going to opt out of playing this year, if in fact there is baseball. But before we get to that, the coolest thing, without a doubt, was the tip of the cap that was going on all around baseball, all around the country, to the Negro Leagues in its 100th anniversary. And I don't know about you, but, you know, it's always cool to see Hank Aaron, and it's always, you know, cool to see folks like Derek Jeter. But when you got three presidents jumping in and tipping their cap, that's especially cool.
Right. And that is so cool. You know, during the Cal Ripken streak, President Clinton came to the ballpark a couple times, and it was really neat how he engaged with Ripken and Brady Anderson, Ripken's best friend during all that. They had a couple of good chuckles together. The president really enjoyed that. President Obama, of course, loves to throw out the first ball. I went to the White House, sorry, dropping names, and I saw him welcome the Cubs, the championship Cubs, which was a very cool thing. He is so presidential. And three different times I went to the White House when George W. Bush was the president. And one of the times we went up to the private residence and an intern took us all around showing us things with the delightful Mrs. Bush. And one of the interns said, this room right here, this is where he watches baseball. We kind of challenged him. He said, no, he only watches baseball in this room. And then we had this intimate dinner for 17 with President Bush. And he told us a whole bunch of baseball stories that none of us had ever heard because he used to own the Rangers. So he had his own baseball stories to tell. And it was priceless. And I haven't met many presidents, but I can tell you, George W. Bush loves the game legitimately.
So how many times have you been to the White House? Let's review this again. How many times were you invited to go to the White House, Tim?
You asked me to tell the story. I had to tell the story 5 times, and it was really cool each time. So quickly, George W., we asked him to tell the Jeter story again. President Bush has thrown out the first ball, 2001 World Series, Game 3 at home against the Diamondbacks. 9/11 was only a month earlier or so. And Jeter tells him, like, hey, you know, you better get loose before you go up there. And he said, don't throw from the top of the mound, whatever you do. Just throw from the front of the dirt. And he said, and whatever you do, don't bounce it. This is New York. They'll boo you here. So the president got loose under the stadium, walked to the top of the mound. As you remember, Buster, he threw an athletic strike to the plate. It was one of the great moments ever. And he retold that story that night at the White House. It was really cool.
Todd Green was the catcher that night. Very cool. Five times invited to the White House. Uh-huh. I've been there once, and I bought a ticket. I bought a ticket, and the one time I went...
All right. Now, let's understand, of course, George W. Bush owned the Rangers. When I covered the Rangers, he was around the ballpark all the time. I knew him as the Rangers owner, not the governor, not as the president. I got to know him when he owned a baseball team. That was my connection.
Yeah. Taylor, you grew up in that area. How many times have you been invited to the White House?
I went to the White House one time. It was on kind of special pass because my grandmother worked for Jeb Bush for a long time. So not quite an invite, but maybe a rung above that. So Tim, we can hang together. No big deal.
Man, I'm kind of starting to wonder what mailing list I'm on that doesn't get me invited to the White House. I would say this, you know, just all kidding aside, I remember one time when I was covering the Mets, Bill Clinton. It was actually on Jackie Robinson Day, 1997. I was covering the Mets for the New York Times, and President Clinton came into the clubhouse, and you know, all the players responded to him. You mentioned President Bush, Tim. I'm jealous. Like, I'd love to talk baseball with him, and especially about his dad, who you know played at Yale. Tim, I can't tell you that President Obama is especially good at throwing out a first pitch based on what I've seen.
No, he's not. And when we did the game in Cuba, Eduardo Perez, of course, was with us, and we interviewed the President of the United States during the game. And Eduardo says to the President something to the effect of, "Boy, you don't have a very good throwing arm, by the way. Your first ball off efforts aren't particularly good." Right to the president, and President Obama looked at Eduardo and said, "Look, I'm sorry. My father is not a Hall of Fame baseball player like yours. I apologize. I'm not as good as you." It was a priceless back and forth, and only Eduardo would say something like that, kidding, of course, to the president.
All right. Before we go, I was just going to mention Bob Kendrick, who, of course, is the president of the Negro Leagues Museum in Kansas City. I think you'd agree with me. He's building a heck of a resume to be honored at the Hall of Fame someday based on everything that he's done. And if he were to be honored at the Hall of Fame, probably would be with the Buck O'Neill Award.
Absolutely. The job he has done with the museum and with Negro League Baseball is so, so impressive. And if anyone's never been there before, you really got to check that place out. It is terrific.
All right. So yesterday we get the first round of names of players opting out. I don't think there's any question we're going to hear more names. The Minnesota Twins also benched two of their coaches, basically informed them that they're not going to be allowed to participate. Ryan Zimmerman, Tim, had signaled the possibility that he would opt out when he wrote a piece, a diary for the Associated Press the other day. Mike Leake, Joe Ross, Ian Desmond, as those names are coming out, what was going through your mind?
Well, the first thing that went through my mind when the first three guys came out, I said, all right, this is going to be an avalanche now of players. Once somebody has done it, a bunch, and I mean a bunch more, are going to follow. But as soon as I saw the two or three come out, I started checking around, and a lot of people said, no, that's not going to happen. There are going to be more, of course, but this isn't going to start a tidal wave of players saying, I don't want to play. In Ryan Zimmerman's case, we know this, Buster. He's one of the great leaders in the game. He's one of the great good guys in the game. And given his family situation, 3-week-old son, his mother with multiple sclerosis, and he's extremely close with his mom, that really didn't surprise me. But it's really important to note just how quality a guy Ryan Zimmerman is. And maybe more will look at him and say, well, someone of that character decides maybe I'm next. And he's good friends, of course, with Ian Desmond, who has a similar home situation for children. So I think more are coming. I thought there would be an even bigger title, I think, is a good sign, I think.
Do you think that the peer pressure of the situation is going to be a factor? In other words, some players will feel like, you know, I have to play for my teammates, because I got to tell you, I'm not convinced that there's a lot of that going on. I think that players are going to be respected for whatever decisions that they make.
Yeah, I misread this, Buster. I just thought the competition factor, that the guys factor, the clubhouse factor would trump everything. Okay, we're all in this together. We're going to get through this together. Team and teammates is all that matters. I misread that. I think we're going to see players say, I love my team. I'd love to compete, but I've got more important things here. So that's why I think we're going to see some more players. And I have no issue with any player who picks his family situation, the health of his family, over baseball. I just didn't see it happening this quickly. I thought once we got to spring training, July the 1st, let's say, guys looked around, it wasn't safe enough, and they said, all right, I'm going home. For four guys, you know, all of them prompted in their own way to say no, I think might be a sign of some things to come.
I get the feeling yesterday talking with people around the game that everybody's kind of holding their breath right at this moment, and they're waiting to see what the test results are going to be, because, of course, as players travel and they rejoin their teams, they have to be tested. And I think there's a great curiosity about what those numbers are going to reveal, Tim, especially because these hot spots that we've seen in recent days are all so important to baseball: Florida and Texas and Arizona and California. Some trepidation is what I'm sensing from folks at the team level.
Right. I mean, Buster, we're talking over a third of the teams are affected by the states that have really had a spike here very recently. So, again, what are we going to do with those teams? What are we going to do with those states? What happens if a team has a real issue with all this and more than one player? 10 or 12 players, what do we do then? This is why, obviously, they can't release any schedule information until they can see exactly what spots are the hot spots. And when it's California, Texas, and Florida, those are not good places to have hot spots if you're a major league organization. And that's the tricky part now.
One thing I mentioned on the podcast on Monday, I wanted to get your perspective on this. I'm hearing a lot from the player side, from some players, from some agents. They want to make sure that when these results are discovered, and the results are sent to Major League Baseball, sent to the teams, that there's absolute transparency. There are players who've told me they think that Major League Baseball owes it to the players and the staffers to give them the exact context that they're theoretically participating in. And they, whatever those numbers are, whether they're better than expected, whether they're worse than expected, or whether they're as expected, those numbers need to be out there. Some of the teams have told me that there was pushback from Major League Baseball about releasing specific information because of HIPAA rules. But under the current context, Tim, they have to be 100% transparent, I think.
There's no doubt. Transparency, Buster, has been a real buzzword the last few years all over the country, and especially and also in baseball, of course. But transparency is more important now than ever. These players and everyone else around these organizations needs to know exactly what is going on. There can be no hiding anything at this point. The players, if they're going to go out and play, and the people around the ballpark are going to work, everyone needs to know what the rules are and where everybody is. So I don't think there's any doubt. Transparency is critical right now, especially for the players.
All right, let's talk about what Ian Desmond wrote in his Instagram post, because the news that he's not going to participate was only at the very end of a 9-page Instagram post. First off, and I know Ian Desmond, but I'd like you, based on your experience as someone who lives in the Washington area, you got to know him when he was with the Nationals. Tell me about Ian Desmond, the type of person that he is.
Well, he's a great dude. There's no way around that. And I had a veteran player on the baseball and say, this was a couple years ago. He said, you know why the Nationals haven't figured this out? They lost Ian Desmond. Ian Desmond left. That's how much of a character guy this current player thought Ian Desmond meant to the Nationals in the clubhouse, and a very good player, although the numbers are going down. But I also know him very well as a father, as a husband, and he's got a slightly different look at these things. And he just basically said, look, this is for my kids. I got to be their father. I got to show them what's going on here. So he left a lot of money on the table. And I'm not shocked that he did that, because knowing him the way that I do, that's kind of the way that he's built. And Ryan Zimmerman kind of taught him the way. So I don't think it's a complete coincidence that Zimmerman goes home and Ian Desmond follows.
Yeah, to not play this year is going to cost Ian Desmond something in the range of $5 to $6 million if, in fact, they're able to play. I've, you know, since he got to the big leagues, he has absolutely used his platform to help people. His charity work is unbelievable. And I, you know, have friends, mutual friends with him that he doesn't know that we're mutual friends. And the stories that I hear about Ian and how he's extended himself throughout his major league career are incredible. Like, this is someone who really cares about other people. And I think that context is important to set up what he wrote, part of what he wrote about baseball. This is one of the quotes that certainly is getting a lot of attention today. He wrote that in clubhouses, we've got racist, sexist, homophobic jokes or flat out problems. We've got a minority issue from the top down, one African-American GM, two African-American managers, less than 8% black players, no black majority team owners. He spoke specifically about the access to baseball, Tim, for kids who are minorities. And I got to tell you, that absolutely reflects conversations I've had with people in the game recently about how they feel like, especially this year with the draft being cut to five rounds, with minor league affiliations going down, that baseball is losing through those decisions the ability to connect with minorities, because baseball in the United States and Canada is a sport generally played by middle class kids, you know, lower or upper class kids, as described to me. You've got a lot of country club kids who are playing baseball now. And being able to do that because it costs a lot of money to play travel ball.
Right. And sometimes, Buster, as we know, if you're really going to make a point, you have to be very dramatic about it and do something that really gathers attention. And for him to give up almost $6 million to not play this year and use his platform to say, you know, I'm not playing because of my children and health and everything else, but he's making it clear of his protest of things that are going on within the game. And people really listen when you give up $6 million like he did and not play a game that he loves to play and play for a team for which he loves to play. So this is a very powerful statement from Ian Desmond. And again, not a giant surprise here.
Theo Epstein, the head of baseball ops of the Cubs, recently spoke with reporters. And I'm paraphrasing here. He basically said that he has to reexamine what he's done. And he said, you know, I look at the a lot of the people who I've hired and they look a lot like me. And I think a lot of that examination, Tim, is going on in the game and has really gathered momentum since George Floyd was killed. And I would not at all be surprised as we move forward that there is a greater effort and that folks like Ian Desmond are a part of that.
Right. Well, obviously there should be a greater effort. We all know that the number of African-American players is down significantly from, say, the mid-70s, and that needs to go back up. But like Ian Desmond is saying, and like Theo Epstein is saying, it can't just be the players. It has to be people who work for the club, front office people, owners, people like that. That's what needs to happen if real change is going to happen. And when a future Hall of Famer says something like that as an executive, Theo Epstein, and again, a really good player, Ian Desmond does, that's when people really start to take notice, and obviously it's about time.
I don't think there's any question that part of the reason why the numbers of African-American players started to go down in baseball is that baseball like a lot of businesses, began to look at cost efficiency. And so they began to invest in academies in Dominican Republic, because quite simply, they get more volume of players, potential talent, for less cost. And it's why you've seen baseball in the last 30 years really begin to shift a lot of its dollars in developing minor leaguers to countries like the Dominican Republic, because they can get them at a cheaper cost. And part of the conversation I've been having with front office executives in the last couple weeks has been about ways to foster more inclusion in for baseball in the United States, in Canada. And some of the ideas I've heard and some individual teams already do this. For example, the Yankees do it. The Red Sox have a team. The Royals work with some teams. But you'd almost like a sub-league where, the 30 major league teams within their communities develop their version of AAU teams and pick up the cost of travel, which prevents a lot of players from playing. I also think scholarships, potentially some funding at the JUCO level, maybe some scholarship, for Division I, because the feeling among a lot of front office officials is that with just 11.7 scholarships available to each of the Division I programs, that inevitably there are going to be players who say, well, I can get a full ride playing college football, or I can take a partial scholarship playing baseball and struggle to find the rest of the money. And so I think there's a lot of brainstorming going on right now about how to make baseball more accessible. What are some of the ideas that you've heard that you like?
Well, Buster, it needs to go back, way earlier than collegiate days, even though everything you said is right on target there. But I have a friend who coached a travel team of 12-year-olds, and he told me it cost each kid roughly $10,000 a year to play on the travel team. And he said, and that doesn't count the travel for mom and dad to go see all the games. To me, that's where one of the biggest problems, you talk about country club kids, how many families can afford $10,000 for a 12-year-old to play baseball and then add goodness knows how much on top of that so mom and dad can travel to all those games, stay in hotels and everything else? That's a real problem, and I know baseball is understanding of it and looking into it, but to me, it's got to start before scholarships in college. It's got to start with our Little League program.
And hopefully that conversation that's been redoubled this year will lead to change, because I agreed with Ian Desmond 100%. There needs to be change in this regard, and it needs to carry all the way through front offices. All right, Tim, cross our fingers. We're hoping this all works out.
Yeah, let's hope so, Buster. Let's hope July 23rd is opening day. Let's keep our fingers crossed. I worry, but let's keep a positive attitude here.
Now, before we get to Tim and his baseball minute, a reminder that you should check out the latest episode of The Hoop Collective. 10 years after the decision, Brian Windhorst, Kevin Arnovitz, and Nick Friedel recount the unforgettable week that nearly ended with LeBron James, Dwayne Wade, and Chris Bosh choosing the Chicago Bulls over the Miami Heat. Find it wherever you get your podcast. Here's Tim Kirkjian's Baseball Minute about Sandy Koufax.
Hi, this is Tim Kirkjian, and on this date in 1962, Sandy Koufax pitched his first no-hitter. He struck out the side on 9 pitches in the first inning of that game. He would throw 3 more no-hitters, one of which was a perfect game. Koufax is one of the greatest pitchers of all time, and when it comes to peak value, he might be the greatest left-handed pitcher ever. He won 3 Cy Youngs. Over his last 4 seasons, he went 97-27. Over his last 2 years, he won the Triple Crown of Pitching. And in 1965, he became the only pitcher ever to have 300 more strikeouts than walks in a season. And he was especially good in the postseason. In 8 World Series games, he had a 0.95 ERA. Koufax was a great athlete, a great basketball player, and he's got these enormous hands which allowed him to manipulate the baseball, especially when he threw that great curveball. Frank Robinson is one of the greatest hitters I've ever met and the most confident hitter ever. I asked him once, how did you do against Gibson? He said, oh, I hit him. I said, how'd you do against Marichal? He said, oh, I hit him good. I said, how'd you do against Drysdale? He said, I hit him good. I said, how'd you do against Koufax? He went, nobody could hit that man.
Bleacher Tweets.
Alrighty, Buster, Bleacher Tweets for Tuesday. First up, Justin Simmons at Justin Lance Sim 1 writes in, you've brought up tanking. A friend of mine had a good idea. Major League Baseball should reward the top draft spots to the teams that barely miss the playoffs, rewarding the teams that try to compete. Could it ever happen? I would say no, but interesting hypothetical. What do you think, Buster?
I like the idea a lot. The first person I heard mention that idea actually was agent Scott Boras in a conversation. I remember writing an article about that 5 years ago. I don't know if you could necessarily get small market teams to agree to that, but I like the idea. I do think they need to do something to stem tanking. I do worry about in a 60-game season that you're going to see teams aggressively work to go to the bottom, particularly your Orioles.
Whatever. I'm excited for it. Fast forwarding through time, as I keep saying. Scott Chapelier at SR Chappie writes in, New York, New Jersey, Connecticut are quarantining anyone coming from states with high coronavirus rates for 14 days. How much of an effect do you think this will have on teams in the area trying to get ready for the shortened season? I can tell you, living in Connecticut, it is not quote unquote mandatory. I don't think they will throw you in chains and stick you in a hotel room for 14 days. But it definitely interesting quandary. What do you think, Buster?
Yeah. And part of the interesting part of this, I mentioned in the podcast on Monday how, you know, you have all these general managers who are trained at contract negotiations and team building. And now they're like COVID governors of their respective organizations. And they have to work to navigate through all this stuff where they're calling up local officials and trying to get special rules for them. That's what's happening with the Toronto Blue Jays. I got to say, Taylor, I don't know about you, but if I were a resident of the city of Toronto and your city is basically, you know, shut down in terms of people coming in, you can leave Canada, but you can't go in unless you take 14 days to self-isolate. That obviously can't help and happen in baseball. I wouldn't want that if I were in an area. Like, if I were a resident there, all of a sudden, these players who've been down in Florida,
right,
and there's no rules that they actually have to stay in place once they get to Toronto. I mean, either the rules are there for a reason to protect everybody.
Yeah, I mean, you got 100, probably like 100 people rolling in just willy-nilly, and it's signed off by the government. That seems a little bit dicey. I was kind of wondering if Toronto might have to play their home game somewhere else, but I guess it sounds like the Canadian government's going to allow it.
Well, we'll see, because I tell you, I do a weekly radio hit up in Toronto, and the reaction on the ground is not good. Folks are like, wait a second. and to your point, they actually did talk about possibly playing in Buffalo at one point, but right now their hope is they'll be able to play in Toronto. But I don't, the Yankees come rolling in, or the Red Sox or a division rival go rolling in to Toronto, they're not going to have time to quarantine for 14 days or self-isolate for 14 days.
No, they might have come off a series with Tampa down there in the hotspot.
Exactly. And again, these are not – yes, they have guidelines, and they're telling them, we really need you to stay in one place. That there's no assurance that they actually did that.
Yep. I guess it's like Jake Diekman said, it's going to be on the players to police how tight the bubble is. So we'll see how it goes. Last one up for today, Brian Simpson at BSimp120274 writes in, since it seems that Major League Baseball wants to go toward an automated strike zone, wouldn't this be the perfect year for Major League Baseball to try it out, mainly because of social distancing between the catcher and the umpire?
Yeah, well, in theory, yes. But we actually had heard going into spring training that they were going to use the automated strike zone to some degree. But they have to maintain a relationship with the umpires union. And so for this year, I don't think that that's going to be an issue.
Alrighty, that's Bleacher Tweets for Tuesday. Subscribe, rate, and review to the podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
That's it for today. Thanks for listening. My thanks to Tim and Taylor. Have a great day. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on the color of someone's skin is something we should work to crush every single day.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, don't forget to listen to the Fantasy Focus podcast. Check out all podcasts at ESPN.com/PodCenter. Baseball Tonight, the podcast.